Northern Brewer is the proud sponsor of the Brewing Network's Jameel Show. They have the widest selection of domestic and imported malts and grain, hops from all over the world, and a full line of liquid and dry yeast. No matter what style of beer you're brewing, Northern Brewer has the ingredients you need, plus fast shipping and expert staff to help you make the best beer possible. Please visit northernbrewer.com for all things homebrew. Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Plisse.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
We have to correct he's not the here. Intro. No Jameel Zainasheff.
Yeah, where's Jameel?
What did you do, John?
I got him sick at our party.
I think we killed his liver.
We killed Jameel last weekend.
Yeah, the poor guy's got a flu symptom, and he's just bedridden.
It's no good. It's never any good.
Yeah, I guess he's been passing the flu bug with his family round and round, and he can't make it
like
to
I was
NEC.
Saying before, his clean room wasn't as clean as he thought.
Yeah.
It's true. Well, Jameel did ask me personally. He said, listen, we've scheduled to do the shows. I want to make sure we get through the shows. Would you please ask Dr. Scott to fill in for me? So, John, you got Doc.
He looks just as good.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Yeah.
And then, of course, the other idea we had, we thought we're going to the National Homebrewers Conference. We've got all these people around. Who could we get to fill in on the show with us?
We could get anybody.
And the guy we really wanted wasn't available, so we got Ray Daniels.
There you go. Our backup. Oh, yeah. That's not a bad backup.
Ray Daniels, author of Designing Great Beers, which happens to be Dr. Scott's favorite book.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
So he's going to help out today in honor of Jameel, who wishes he could be here. John Plisse, Dr. Scott, and Ray Daniels are going to cover Vienna Lager for you.
Vienna Lager.
I mean, how much better could that get?
Come on. Shoot, we'll be drinking some at the end of the show. We got some listener beer here, so that should be good. So,
Of course, the Jameel Show, brought to you as always, and it's exciting here because we're in the room with some of our fantastic sponsors. But the Jameel Show is brought to you by Northern Brewer, who is right down
here in the hospitality suite.
And they've been taking care of this show for a long time and bringing it to you. And without those guys doing it, we wouldn't have been able to keep it going. So it's kind of exciting to be able to do the show with them sitting right there.
Oh, yeah.
Except that you must be nervous. You can't screw up, John.
I should take my shirt off.
Yeah, come on. No more beer.
they're great
guys.
What
makes tonight any different?
Yeah, nothing at all. So, right on.
It's an exciting conference this year. It is sold out once again.
Yeah, like 1,000 people, I guess.
I believe it's record attendance.
Yeah.
Bray, you might know a little more about it than us, but I believe it's record attendance here this year. We're, of course, live from Cincinnati. And that's exciting because we get to bring our radio to the folks here, but we also get to bring our radio to the folks at home who didn't get to make it this year.
Exactly.
I mean, some of us can't even go to the banquet later, Doc, on Saturday.
Why is that?
We have to sit here in the corner. That's where they like to keep us. But we're going to carry the award ceremony in this room to the people because the banquet sold out before the rest of it sold out. Everyone wanted to be there.
Wow.
So we're going to be here all week. And on Saturday, when the awards are happening, we'll stream the whole thing live to you at home and then also here in the hospitality suite.
Perfect.
You keep saying we.
You too, Doc. You're going to have to work
this
week.
Stuff?
You have to work. You got to do something, Doc.
Okay.
You got to work. Together.
So I'm getting paid now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
Now, Ray, will you be signing Designing Great Beers this week?
I've signed several copies already.
You're doing it already.
Yeah. You know, pretty much people find me. I got a pen. They got a pen. There's a book involved.
Book.
We do that.
Yeah. It has to happen.
Right along, pretty much.
Doc will be signing cleavage all week. He doesn't have a book yet.
But not
I'm
man,
available
not
for
man,
that, too.
Not man cleavage.
Right.
Yeah.
I was
going to
say that.
Ditto. Yeah, there's some guys out here that were getting ideas there for a second.
Yeah, you can tell.
They're signing cleavage.
Yeah. All right, guys. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Vienna Lager, Jim?
Okay. Well, Vienna Lager, I actually got one going second round. Wish me luck.
Hey, we got to give it a look at this.
We got a couple guys.
That was yours?
Oh, thanks. Oh, is that good, huh?
I didn't know you had one in the second round.
Yeah.
Great.
I'll tell you my little secret later. But Vienna Lager, it's a lightly toasted beer. In the aromas, you get like a rich malt aroma. Definitely some Munich and Vienna Melanoid malts coming through in the aromas. It's definitely a clean lager character. You don't want any like acetaldehyde. You don't want any sulfur. Definitely a properly fermented beer. Very little hop aroma. It's definitely a malt forward beer to drink, and you don't really want a caramel note coming through. It's definitely all rich malt complexity coming through. Visually, it's light amber to copper, very clear. It's a malty beer balanced with enough hops, and you want to provide enough hops so it's not cloyingly sweet. So that's the trick. So you have a rich malty beer, enough hop. It's a lager. It's amber. It's not as strong as an Oktoberfest, and it should finish really, really dry too. What else? It's medium carbonation, and it's quaffable, easy drinking, ranges from 4.5% to 5.5% alcohol. And overall, you should get like a soft, gentle kind of creaminess coming through. Definitely an emphasis on the malt, not bitter, not a lot of aromas from the hops, and it's definitely a very enjoyable amber lager to drink. So if you can brew one, ferment it cool, 48 to 52, and let it lager 6 to 8 weeks, and you should be good. And if you, there's a great book called Brewing Classic Styles, just out. By Jamil Zainashef. And
we
got a copy right here, and I'm sure he'd be stoked to share that recipe with you and buy his book if you haven't. And you support the guy that's bedridden right now. So
yeah,
and he's got 22 beers going too. So
I know it.
Yeah, look out.
But you have to be here to collect the win, though.
I kind of want to collect the win for him. I don't know if he'll allow me to do it. Can I give his acceptance speech too?
Yeah, you should. Yeah.
That would be a mess.
Somebody should. It should be you.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about this style, and I'm glad that we're doing it here, because it's one of these styles that commercially, so this is great for us homebrewers, commercially it's almost non-existent, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Very few examples?
Especially up until now. No more. You've seen a little bit more in the craft brewing industry, but God, for a while there, it was tough to find one.
Is Dos Equis Amber a Vienna lager? Because that's one of my favorites that, to me, tastes like one, but I'm not positive that's the style.
That's what they kind of model it off of. A lot of the German brewers. Went to Mexico. And
right, yeah. Immigration in the mid-1800s, same wave that brought the German brewers to the United States. Some of them went down to Central America.
Huh. Okay.
Like Negra Modelo and some of those amber Mexican beers are in that model.
Okay.
Nice, clean amber lagers is what you're shooting for.
Now, how about some of the craft brewers? Does Gordon Biersch make a...
That's the one that I think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the only one I can think of that I've had that's been really, really
pretty
outstanding.
Close.
Okay.
Those guys do such a great job with lagers, and that's a tough.
Dan's definitely nice.
Always tough thing to hit.
Sure.
Or maybe the Capital guys might have one. I can't think that I've had it. Capital Brewing, Wisconsin, but
okay. Well, that's the great thing about home brewing is we have these options to brew these styles that and then with this new book,
right,
we can kind of expand a little bit more horizons and stuff.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, the tough thing is always when you can't find something to compare your home brewer, your target to.
Yeah,
you're just kind of going by what you read in books or what you hear.
Yeah.
And you kind of shoot in the dark a little bit. But again, if you come up with a nice, clean, dark amber lager.
Definitely.
It's one of my favorite styles of lagers because it's... Because I'm an ale drinker. I really enjoy ales. And I think that the malt profile, to me, tastes a lot like an ale. But it's so clean. It has that, like you were saying, that for the style, it should have a really dry finish.
Dry finish, malty... Hop flavor, some, but not bitter.
Yeah.
It's very dry.
Yeah. And that's what I really enjoy about the style.
Well, I could definitely, would you say, Ray? I mean, it's like a cross between like an Ankerstein and a Meersen, maybe, but a lighter version, like some characteristics of that.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but
it was a random thought right now, so I don't know.
At some level, it's almost say like a Helles and a Meritzen. I mean, that's sort of the middle ground. I mean, two definite lagers, both very malt balanced beers. That soft German malt flavor. Those are the two that I think of as being closest to it.
Okay.
One of the things though is that the Oktoberfest, the Meritzen Oktoberfest style, has evolved a lot in the last 10, 15 years in Germany. Now it's a much paler. Closer to a Pilsner sort of thing, a malty Pilsner, than it used to be.
With color.
Not much color.
Really?
A lot of the German Märzens these days are very pale in color, and you know, I've a couple times I've ordered one in a restaurant and it comes and I'm like, no, I wanted the Marison. And it's like, that's it.
Yeah. In fact, if you get the Polaner Oktoberfest, which is available all over the U.S. in the bottle, it's not quite that light as this beer in front of you. It's not golden, but it is. It's a lot lighter. Again, we could talk about Gordon Biersch. Their Marison is, to me, and because that's the Marison I grew up on here in the U.S., it's red.
It's red.
It's the more traditional. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Style. So the very first Oktoberfest I had that came out of Germany, you're right, I was surprised, Ray. I almost sent it back.
Yep.
But it is a much gold. But it still has a deep malt flavor.
Yeah.
Which I think is what's wonderful about German lagers is that they have a really deep and nice malt flavor. They kind of surprised me before I was a beer guy.
Well, they're definitely well balanced all around. I mean, they're the most enjoyable, at least for me personally, but they have the best of both worlds, hops and malt, you know.
Yeah.
Smooth all the way across. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a real quick break. We're going to take care of some sponsors that help this show come through.
Yeah.
We're
going
to give a good hello to Jamil, who maybe he could be listening at home.
Cheers,
just
Jamil.
Like you.
Hey, Jamil.
Wish we had him here. This is the Jamil Show. He covers a new style every time we do it, and John Plisse is his normal co-host, so he's really keeping the fort going here. We got Dr. Scott and Ray Daniels helping us out. So a real quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Ray about how he would design a great Vienna lager, and then we're going to talk about Jamil's recipe, and Doc's going to help us do that. So stick with us. It's the Jamil Show right here on the Brewing Network.
Oh, crap. It's the hop shortage. He's in the basement.
Oh, please. My triple decocted Imperial Pilsner.
It's all gone. We'll never brew again.
Damn this hop shortage. Damn it to hell.
Was ist los? Hop shortage?
Who are you guys?
Ich bin Doppelbock.
Ich bin Kölsch.
Und ich bin Münchener Helles.
Wir don't need a lot of hops to be delectable.
Now brew something malty.
Use less hops, brew more beer. Northern Brewer has kits and ingredients for dozens of worldwide beer styles that don't require a lot of hops to make a great pint, like the cool blonde Kölsch or the ponderously bottom-heavy Doppelbock. Keep drinking great beer. Order at northernbrewer.com and get flat rate $7.99 shipping anywhere in the contiguous U.S. One beer kit, $7.99 shipping. 1 million beer kits, $7.99 shipping.
Together we can beat this hop shortage.
Mm-hmm. Now get brewing!
What have you gotten out of a vial of White Labs yeast?
WLP001, Cal Ale, baby!
23, Burton Ale.
008, East Coast Ale.
Cal Common, WLP810.
It's gonna be WLP400 with beer!
I got a sweet hoodie for my vial.
Huh?
White Labs, your source for great brewer's yeast, would like to invite all homebrewers to join the White Labs Customer Club. Redeem your empty vials for great White Labs merchandise and products. Free yeast, glassware, t-shirts, baseball caps, sweatshirts, polo shirts, and you won't believe what you'll get for 5,000 vials. Members also receive a newsletter packed with White Labs updates and facts, interviews with professional brewers, brew your own clone recipes, beercook.com recipes, and customer club stories. The White Labs Customer Club. Save your vials and get in the club. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
We are back. The Jamil Show without Jamil. How'd that work?
This is the part where he usually laughs at you for singing and dancing in the studio.
And I usually like trying to freak him a little bit, and he doesn't appreciate that too much.
It gets bad quick.
Grinding thing. He doesn't like that.
I've tried. So we're live at the Nationals Homebrewers Conference, and this is brought to you by Northern Brewer. Thank you, Northern Brewer, wherever you are. They're somewhere around here. So cheers to you guys for sponsoring the show, and it's been a great, great help. And you guys have great supplies and great people and great beer, so thanks very much.
Juno got one of our shirts today, so I expect to see him wearing it.
Okay,
yeah,
sweet.
Gotta have to see that. All right, Vienna Lager's our style today, and we got Ray Daniels helping us out, who, of course, wrote the book Designing Great Beers, Doc's favorite. And, Ray, maybe help us out. How would we design a great Vienna Lager, especially given what we mentioned? There's not a lot of good commercial examples for us to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a challenging style to try and do. And, of course, you know, I'm going to do the same thing that a lot of you guys would do when it comes time to brew this beer. I'm going to go to the bookshelf, pick up my favorite book, and open it up to page 335.
Nice.
And say, gee, what did I write? Yes, what did I write?
I had to go to the Brewers awesome. Publication booth before the show and borrow a couple of books so we could get through the show.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Good source.
So rather than reading something that people can access on their own, talk a little bit about, you know, what mentally in my mind what I would try and do. And I mean, clearly malt, this is a beer with where we're exhibiting the beauty of malt, and yeah. A beer where you know, the German expression that malt is the soul of beer is personified in this particular style. So, you know, you're looking for a great malt, you're looking for something with some color to it. And there's a variety of ways to do that. We know that some maltsters make Vienna malts that are somewhere between a Pilsner and a Munich in their color, and that could be a great way to go. And I mean, I would at this point recall one of the great dictums of brewing, which is that simplicity oftentimes makes the most fantastic beers. So if you can find a nice Vienna malt, two row, preferably from Europe, you know, that sounds like a really good bet. That's a great place to start and see how the beer works out. If you can't find that sort of malt, or if you can't just bring yourself to make that simple a beer, as I know, you know, hey, I'm guilty too. You know, that looks really good, but maybe we should put a little something else in there too. Then, you know, then you start looking at, okay, well, maybe we'll do a blend of Vienna and Munich, or maybe just for good measure we'll put some Pilsner and some Vienna and some Munich in there. Or if we really want to make it complicated, you know, then we can start looking at some of those other lightly roasted malts. You know, the biscuit, the special roast, the victory, aromatic. Yeah, all of those things. And, you know, a little bit of a few of those things might provide some really interesting flavor complexity to the beer. So, you know, simplicity is always a good place to start. And maybe just a little something else in there to give it a little more complexity. That's probably the approach I'd take on the malt bill.
Wow. It seems like the sky's the limit with this style. I mean, you could go from simple to intense, mess around a little bit, or...
That's true for every style, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, what I was going to add, especially because Jamil in this really likes to stick to the style and how it would be if it was judged by BJCP, I wanted to ask you, Munich malt wouldn't actually really be out of style, even if you had to use it, would it?
Oh, no, not at all.
It
not
would
at
be
all.
The characteristic.
And I mean, you know, if you really wanted to make an aggressive Vienna lager, you could make an all Vienna malt formulation.
100%.
It's probably going to be 100%.
Really?
It's probably going to be darker than style. But if you make it to a lower original gravity, I think the range is 12 to 13.5 to 1048 to 1054.
Sure.
If you make it at the low end of the range, 1048 with all Munich malt, nothing else,
it's probably,
you know,
fine.
It probably would be a credible Vienna. You'd probably have lots of nice malt flavor. And the color's probably going to be a little on the dark side, but maybe not too much if at that lower gravity. That could work really well.
And you know, you got nothing else in there except for it'll convert itself. It's enough to be a base malt.
It's enough to do it.
Yeah. So do you need Vienna malt at all to make Vienna lager? Or not?
Well, it's not required.
Okay.
Not required. I think you could do a very credible job. I think you make a very nice beer. I mean, let's go back to the origins of this stuff. I mean, you know, in the 1800s, you know, wasn't much in the way of specialty malts. Crystal malt wasn't invented until the 1870s or so. And so it used to be that the malt you made drove the beer you made. And, you know, brewing was really more about malting than it was about brewing, or just as much about malting as it is brewing. And that's really true today if you're, you know, running a big brewery and you have that much scope of control.
Sure.
But for most of it's really more about finding a great malt and putting it in our beer. So, you know, if there's a choice between a six-row Vienna that you don't really like the flavor of and a great, you know, two-row Munich, man, I'd go with the Munich and just, you know, take the gravity down a little bit. Or if you're still worried about it being too dark, too full, mix it with some Pilsner malt, you know, put in a quarter, 25% Pilsner malt, and the rest Munich malt. Do that. So, you know, one of the charts that's in designing, just flipping through here while you guys were talking, and remembering that there's a chart in there that looks at the total combination of Pilsner, Vienna, and Munich in a whole bunch of the example beers. And generally, most of the recipes had 80 to 90%. of their grist that consisted of those three malts. Wow. And in various combinations, but that was the base.
Now, historically, how has that changed from the 1800s to now?
Well, again, 1800s, it was one malt.
They
made a malt, they put it in there, that was it. Huh. I've got another really interesting data point. I'm gonna wag something in your faces here. Those of you at home will have to imagine
it's
me wagging wagging this in their faces. But George Fix wrote a book called Vienna Merits and Oktoberfest. Yeah. The copyright date is 1991, so this one's been around for a little while.
Sure.
But George and Lori, his wife, did a lot of research on Viennas, and George, you know, George was one of the most dedicated brewers of beers, writing about brewing. You know, he didn't just say, you know, do a couple of beers and then write about what he thought. George brewed all the time, entered beers in competitions all the time, and he used that as data for his stuff. So this is George's take on the style, and so I flipped it open just to kind of see, oh, what's George's Vienna? And I was really shocked when I read this, because every one of his Vienna recipes has got crystal malt in it.
Yeah,
and I was like, George,
what are you doing? What are you doing? It's funny, they talk about in the style guidelines, you don't want like a caramel aroma or a crystal aroma, and yet he's using it. And
So, I mean, obviously, that's what worked for him. Now, remember, this is a copyright date of 1991. The malts that George had available in that time were very different from what we have now.
Sure.
We have better malts. We have better dark malts. We have better Munich and Vienna malts now. So I have a feeling if George were around still, he'd probably take a different approach. But this is to say, you know, not totally out of bounds, not totally off base here. He's talking about 6 ounces of crystal malt,
in a
5-gallon recipe. So a very small amount, just to give you a little bit of lusciousness, a little bit of color, a little bit of that caramel character.
Do you think those recipes would still, you know, apply today if you're entering the National Homebrewers Conference? And
I don't know.
Is it worth a shot?
The one thing I didn't do was go look at the BJCP style description for Vienna. So might not cut it.
Well, it's right there.
There you go. Read
Doc
this.
Did.
That's 4-point type, and I'm not capable.
That's what
of
Doc said earlier.
That's what I said too.
In fact, wait a minute. Sorry, no, that's 3-point type.
Yeah. I told John the same thing when he handed it to me. I'm getting old here. Come on.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Give me a break.
What was what crystal was it on those? Because you mentioned just enough for a little color. So I'm wondering if he was all the way up at a 120 or something.
I think they were. He's talking about a light German crystal. Actually, there's a dark German crystal. There's a couple different things that he mentions in here.
Okay.
So even the guidelines say that you can use some crystal, but not to make it so much so that you're getting excess crystal malt flavor out of it, excessive sweetness, because you really want a dry one at the end.
Okay. So you're really just using that for color then?
Yes, color. And I think George was trying to compensate for what he had to do with. He needed to get some color. He needed to get some complexity in there.
Okay.
And he didn't have any of the other base malts that we do now that he can get that from. And as Ray was saying, would it hold up now? Well, that's a compromise back then, and we can dial in a lot better now with what we have.
Yeah. So, John, I'm curious. Now Ray has described a way to make a real simple malt profile and how to make it as complex as you want. How does that, what Ray's saying, compare to yours, which is here in the second round? Because it's obviously done well as a style Vienna lager. What does your malt profile look like?
Well, Ray had mentioned earlier that he's like, you know, it's kind of a mix between like a Helles and a Dunkel or something. Well, mine is actually a blend this year.
Oh.
Yeah. It's 70% Munich Helles and 30% Munich Dunkel.
Dunkel, okay.
Yeah.
Really?
So it's a blend.
That's not cheap. That's
for
innovation.
Vienna. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
you get a nice, that Melanoid Munich flavor from the Dunkel. You get that bitterness from the Munich Dunkel, and then you get that base flavor from the Helles. And it's a great beer, and you get that nice tan, creamy head retention. It's just...
John makes a great Helles to boot.
Yeah, so.
How did you figure out, this is a little off topic, so we should do it quick, but how did you figure out the blend? Did you sit around and just taste different...
I have a 50-mil graduated cylinder, and I just do blends, and I pour off the tap. You know, I drink a lot of beer, of course, when I'm doing it. And
good.
I'm just, the color's right on. It tastes kind of close. I read the guidelines. I look at it. I think, they might like it, you know, and the rest I leave up to the judges, so.
The interesting thing when he does that is the last one he tastes is always the best tasting one.
Oh, yeah. And I'm on the floor, too.
And he's all out. He can't fill a bottle to send in.
Exactly. I pretty much think his mouth is under the tap.
Yeah.
30% of that.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'm amazed at is like 15 milliliter graduated cylinder. Man, doing the math would drive me crazy. Okay, that was 6 mils plus 9 mils. That's if I'm going to make
100 milliliter cylinder.
Oh, it would put me into tears.
Yeah. 100 milliliters is easy.
Yeah.
Or 10.
Anything.
Anything. But why 50?
Yeah.
Now, awesome. Doc, how about you? How does this compare what we're talking about to what you do with a Vienna lager? You're kind of our lager guy here.
Yeah, I like to keep lagers simple. I do like to go nutty, though. Oh, what about this? I want to try this new malt or that. But when you got a nice, clean, malt-forward lager like that, I like to keep it real clean and real simple.
Okay.
I really like starting. I like a Pilsner as a base malt a lot. And I like Vienna malt. Sometimes it's hard to get. But Munich is, you can find more Munich around. And you got to play with the ratios somewhat with that one.
Okay.
As far as design, I like to keep it pretty much to those two. Or I'll do a blend of some Munich, some Vienna, and then Pilsner to kind of round it out. And then if maybe some darker, like a Carafa or something, possibly.
Yeah.
Depending on what it is. But I'll start with just the base ones first and brew that one.
Okay.
I think it more comes down a lot to the yeast you're using and how you're fermenting it.
All right.
We should definitely tap into fermentation about this, too.
Yeah, let's do that. Water as well.
We'll
yeah.
break and get into that. Maybe what we can do before then is just make sure we cover all the ingredients. So I wonder if we can go back to Ray and talk about hops. You talked about simplicity in malt, and we've covered that. What about hopping this beer?
Well, this is one of those beers that the balance is exquisitely balance. to be uneloquent about it.
Sure.
It's right down the middle.
You fit right in here.
The old BU to GU ratio is 0.45 to 0.50. So it's right dab in the middle. Really balanced between the bitterness and the maltiness. So we know where we're going with our bitterness on this. I think you don't think of this as being a hoppy beer in the nose or in the palate, you know, flavor and aroma. But a little bit. I mean, you look at the guidelines, at least in designing, say low to moderate
sure.
Hopping. So, a little bit, just a little bit. You know, we used to think about it like the quarter ounce of sort of noble hops 15 minutes before the end.
So you're getting more of a hop flavor, but not necessarily like a bitterness coming through.
Right,
just to balance it out a little.
Right, exactly. Okay. Just to give you a little, and it's almost to be, you know, perceived as complexity rather than a real overt, you know, hoppiness. It'd
sure.
be one of those things that, wow, this is a really great, nice malty beer, and it's like the second or third taste, it's like, oh yeah, there's a little hop in there too.
Yeah.
I always like to compare it to a Munich. I mean, it's going to be more malt sweetness, more flavor, and you balance that with the hop bitterness. The thing with that one, though, is with the Vienna, you're going to get less sweetness, less of that malt forward, but you still want to have a little bit hoppier. So you're kind of losing one to boost the other, but you don't want to go tip it too far where you've got something that's really bitter or too hop forward.
Well, let me ask you this, Ray. I mean, based on what Doc just said, if you did over hop and over malt a beer, like it was too high, gravity too sweet, maybe, would you kind of, you're entering the National Homebrewers Conference, would you say it was a Mürzen at that point? Because it's like a little bit more of a subdued Mürzen.
Well, yeah. I mean, definitely these two are just sort of like the big brother, little brother relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, you overshoot the Mürzen. And well, you know, if you're judging this category, that's, you get one and say, yeah, I think this guy was trying to make a Mürzen, and he just, you know, sort of missed a little bit. Or, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you can certainly enter it in both if you're just on the cusp.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you'll do
that blending.
Yeah, well in one of your, or start a nice blend. Now, noble hops, of course, you've all said. Does it matter which variety of noble hops? Do you mix the noble hops, or do you like to stick with one?
I like to keep mine one.
Okay.
When I'm doing a nice lager, German lager, I really like to keep it simple in the hops and one, pretty much one dimension in that one. Saz probably for this one's a little too spicy.
Yeah. Well, now these days,
it's hard to get anything you can get.
Yeah, what can you get? Yeah. Right.
Good point. Michael Ferguson told you how to do it today in one of the lectures he gave here.
Oh, I missed it.
We got a recording. We'll see what ends up happening with that. But he talked about substituting hops. But yeah, I guess we are just trying to we're grabbing what we can for this one.
Some Hallertauers I just used. They were the alphas were just
one
ridiculous.
And a half.
A one and a half. Just ridiculous.
Nice.
Okay.
But there's a good substitute out there. It's called Vanguard. Use it. It's very. It's an equivalent to Hallertauer Hirschbrucker. So
okay, and that's available in the homebrew shops.
Yeah,
now? Okay.
More beer, Northern Brewer. They all have it. So
okay,
definitely.
All right.
So you're
good.
Really not trying to build a hop complexity here. So
right.
You don't really need to mix and match with them.
Okay.
So.
you're really just trying to get the balance, not
trying to get some balance and nice clean bitterness coming through, and don't really worry so much about intermingling hops.
Okay.
In this one.
All right. All right, great. Let's take a quick break. We covered your ingredients for you, sans yeast, and we're going to talk about yeast when we come back, and then how to ferment that and do this beer right. This is, of course, the Jameel Show. We're missing Jameel, John.
Jameel Show without Jameel.
He's a fun guy to have around, too, but he is here in spirit. We're trying to do our best here to cover the style. We're talking about Vienna Lager, and when we come back, we'll cover Jameel's recipe out of the book. Okay. We'll cover what yeast we would put in this and how to ferment it, too. So thanks to Northern Brewer, who's right here in the hospitality suite. We're live from Cincinnati, Ohio, having a great time with homebrewers here in the room. Everybody, beers in hands, and listen how excited they are about this. They're like, where the F is Jameel? That's all they're thinking.
Yeah.
We'll be right back on the Jameel Show. Hang in there.
Attention homebrew shop owners. At Ferment Tap, they know you're tired of buying the same old gear that everyone else has. That's why Ferment Tap offers the newest and most cutting-edge brewing equipment known to man. Since 1998, Ferment Tap has been leading the fight against the boring and mundane by offering strange, unique, and just plain smart equipment. Like their stainless stone false bottoms. Never deal with the floating plastic hassle of other false bottoms again. And since they're made from stainless steel, they'll last a lifetime. Ferment Tap's line of copper wort chillers are the best on the market. Designed to cool your wort faster and more efficiently than other immersion chillers. They actually invented the equipment to make these chillers not only work great, but look great too. How about a fantastic line of ingredients, including vanilla beans, sorghum extract, blue agave extract, hot bitterness extract, unique wine yeast, green coffee beans, sake kits, all stuff you can't find anywhere else. Ferment Tap carries all the standard products and equipment you need as well, such as all grain systems, stainless hardware, kettles, carbonation stones, you name it, they've got it. Ferment Tap's entire line of products has been helping retail shops meet the demands of their customers for nearly 10 years, and they want to help you too. For more information, see them on the web at fermentap.com or call Jason at 1-800-942-2750. Ferment Tap, better beer through innovation.
Hi, I'm Sean O'Sullivan, the brewmaster and co-founder of the 21st Amendment Brewery and Restaurant in San Francisco. 6 years ago, Nico Freccia and I opened the 21st Amendment on 2nd Street with the intent of bringing back the local neighborhood brew pub. Well, the neighborhood has really changed over the years, but the 21st Amendment still remains a great place for people to meet over a terrific meal and a tasty pint of beer. In the past, the only way you could enjoy the 21st Amendment's handcrafted beers was at the brew pub. Well, all that has changed. Now, the 21st Amendment beers are available in cans. That's right, cans. When was the last time you had a great beer in a can? Well, that day has come. We're offering our world-famous Watermelon Wheat and 21A IPA in cans. Cans are a better package than glass because cans keep the beer fresher longer, but you can also take cans to places where bottles can't go, like the beach, lake, golf courses, and sporting events. So join us in the revolution to take back the can from the big breweries and crack open a cold 21A craft beer in a can. The 21st Amendment, 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park.
And now, back to the Jameel Show.
I just want to rock out right now. Don't you go, Duck?
Zach? Oh, yeah.
You should have been a 60s DJ, John.
I would be.
That was your calling.
I think I missed it. I'm working on the hair, though.
You got to do that.
Yeah, me too. I'm still working on my hair.
You and Ray both.
Yeah. That's awesome.
All right, this is the Jameel Show live from the National Homebrewers Conference in Cincinnati. Just a note of the dedication of Jameel. He just phoned me at the break. Called me to let me know that he's doing okay. He wanted me to let you know, John and Doc, that he's listening.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
All right?
I'll hear it if
he's
I
paying
on
attention.
Report.
Yes, he's listening.
He's taking notes.
He said he's happy to hear Ray sitting with us. Everyone's been asking the whole time how he's doing. He's got pneumonia, so that's not good.
Oh.
But they gave him morphine, so that is good.
Oh.
Hey.
That's probably almost better than beer.
Yeah. He's probably feeling a little better here.
A little 50-50 blend is good.
Yeah.
I'd go for that.
They did have him go take a whole bunch of tests because they wanted to make sure that it couldn't be any of the things that would turn out to be quite bad. And those were all negative. I mean, they did a spinal tap, Doc.
Ooh.
Yeah, they went for it. They really wanted to know because he kind of fell out of a wheelchair. He says, if you ever want to get good service at the ER, fall fall out of your wheelchair because he said they were on him like never before.
Wow. Like, on, like a cheap suit.
Yeah.
But they just had finished reading his insurance coverage and said, oh, dude,
he's going
to run some tests on you.
You're probably right, Ray. But they did do a bunch of tests, and he said he's okay. He said he feels awful. He's doing terribly, but he's going to be okay.
He feels awful, but good enough to call us.
That's great. Good news. Yeah. Well, like I said, he wanted to let you two know he's paying attention.
I'm sure it made him feel better.
I'm going to start sweating now.
Yeah, I'm feeling better.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jamil would want us to thank Northern Brewer just once more for bringing you the Jamil Show here from the Hospitality Suite, which is Northern Brewer's Hospitality Suite at the Cincinnati Homebrewers Conference.
I'm just happy he trusted me to fill in for him.
Yeah, I didn't believe it.
And Ray's been great. Ray, you were just talking at the break that in 91 you placed with a continental lager, which was what, a Vienna lager or something?
Yeah, this is kind of embarrassing. It didn't even occur to me until we were in the middle of the show. Literally, the first national homebrew competition I ever entered was 1990. I'd been homebrewing for less than a year.
Okay.
I think this was maybe the 11th beer that I brewed, somewhere in the early to mid-teens, in terms of number of batches. It was called Diversity Lager. Entered in what was then the category of Continental Dark. We hadn't even sorted out the fact that, like, Vienna and Märzen and Dunkel might be separate beers. You know, we just had a category for continental dark beers.
Wow.
Kind of back in the dark ages of HA and BJCP. But I won gold medal that year.
Really?
In HC, yeah. And I mean, imagine the first time entrant, first year home brewer is, like, kind of blew me off of...
Yeah.
Everything.
Absolutely. So and now you have a whole career in this thing.
Yeah, so I mean, go figure. But I do have to give the caveat that those were very different days.
So don't brew it.
So if anybody goes and looks up that recipe from 1990, I would not recommend that recipe as the exemplary anything.
Is it in your book? Or?
Oh, no.
No.
It's a whole different subject.
It's not in my anything.
It's not in my anything, yeah. It's in my logbook, but that's about it.
Wow. Awesome.
All right, guys. Let's
email you. We can get that. A
little bit of yeast and fermentation so we can make sure we get through this style before everyone's got to go. Everyone's got to get dinner because we got Pro Brewers Night coming up.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
The one thing we can't bring home to you is Pro Brewers Night and Club Night.
And tomorrow's hangover.
We will be broadcasting from Club Night, so you'll hear a bit of it.
All right,
but these are the events that we've got to get ready for. So let's make sure we cover yeast and fermentation.
Well, let's... choose a yeast. I mean, what type of yeast would you use? I mean, definitely a German lager yeast, but which strain?
Oh, I think a lager yeast. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, of course. But
good for
wait,
you.
Wait. I'm thumbing for the book. Yeah, a lager yeast. That sounds good. A lager yeast.
Well, there's perfect. A couple options. Would you use a Märzen yeast?
Ask Doc. He brews lagers.
I mean, come on, Doc.
Yeah. My favorite always go-to lager yeast is Southern German lager.
And why? What do you like about
it? It gives a nice bready, rounded flavor to it.
Okay.
I split yeast. Split batches with yeast all the time.
Sure.
And I always seem to go back to that when I've tried the German yeast, the Bohemian against the Southern German lager.
Okay.
And usually I'm looking for the malt-forward, bready kind of lagers.
And that would definitely complement the style.
It certainly does. So. And it's if I've, it always seems to be my favorite one of the two when I'm splitting batches. If I'm only going to do one, I'm going to go to the Southern German lager. Huh. German lager's pretty good, too. I like that one.
But German lager, I found, it has a fair amount of fruit flavor.
Exactly.
It can be a little fruity. I mean, even if you ferment it cool, but it can have a kind of a hint of ester to it.
It does. Yeah. And you need to have a little different thought in your mind about that one. But the Southern German lager, we're looking for bready, nice, clean flavor. And
malty,
this is what I get out of the Southern German lager.
Yeah, right. Definitely. You're definitely on the mark there in terms of the goal. And I mean, I tell you, I've judged, I can't remember if I've done Vienna's, but I've done several lager categories at Great American Beer Festival.
Wow.
And generally, I'd say, you know, American brewers, their biggest problem is just getting lagers right.
Right.
You know, getting the right flavor profile, getting the right yeast, getting the right fermentation temperature, conditioning it properly. There's a lot of beers entered in lager categories that taste a lot like an ale.
Yeah.
And that's not the idea. So. Yeah. You know, I think that's the tough part anytime you're making a lager style. And I think if you're a competitive brewer,
sure.
If you can get lagers down, if you can make a credible lager, oh, man, you know, you can do well.
Wow. Now, you tasted craft beers. I mean, are you a fan of the craft beers and what they're doing with lagers? Do you like these? I mean, do you think they're pushing? I mean...
There's not many of them out there.
Yeah,
you know, there aren't many. And you know, I mean, Sam Adams, you go to Gordon Biersch, you go to Capital, and those guys are all doing a great job.
Right.
I'm sure there's some people I'm forgetting, but, you know, most of them are making really nice beers. Have I tasted them blind in a panel where I didn't know I was tasting? And, yeah. you know, I may have, I don't know, I may have dinged some of those beers just because
blind tasting.
When you're doing it blind and sure. you're thinking, you're sitting there thinking, man, this is really estery. Lager yeah. shouldn't be estery.
That is the trick.
Yeah.
Especially, it's the only way to defeat your expectations. Yeah. If you know you like Sam right. Adams, you're
going to
give it a lot of credit, no matter what. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, you're right, the blind tasting, you really could, you could pick up anything on any beer
yeah.
that you never saw before just because yeah. you gave it so much credit.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly always been, well, one of my big weaknesses as a brewer was that I was always cellar blind. I mean, I knew what I'd been trying to brew, and so it always tasted perfect to me, you know. But then you give me my same beer in a panel, you know, and I'd be super critical of it and just tear it apart. But wow. couldn't yeah. do that when I knew what it was.
And when you taste that first one, oh, okay, it's time to taste the lager. You've been lagering for a while. Damn, you nailed it.
Well,
well, maybe not. But.
Yeah, well.
So does Jamil agree on the Southern English in his...
Southern German, sorry. Actually, yeah.
That's also his yeah. Yeast.
Okay. He raves about that in the German Bock a lot, which is the WLP 833, the Y yeast equivalent to 2487. And I don't know the Southern German lager, but it's...
I'm looking it up.
It's pretty good.
Okay. Bavarian?
Bavarian lager, right.
Bavarian, yeah. That's. I mean, I actually have... Well, when I was doing a lot of brewing, I made a fair number of lagers. And the Bavarian was the one that I used the most and had the best success with.
Okay. And how about yours?
The Bock 833. Okay. It cleans... I don't have to do a diacetyl rest with the German Bock. You know, I do a six-week ferment... 48 to 50 degrees, and then I just keg it up and carbonate it. It's usually ready to go. But if I mess around with like a Czech yeast or something, I usually have to do a diacetyl rest just because it produces more diacetyl.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And you definitely don't want any diacetyl.
No.
That's my second yeast is the Bock. That's what Jamil turned me on to that one.
So did you brew that side by side, Southern German and Bock?
No, I haven't done that one yet.
Okay.
But when I'm going to any of my bigger beers, yeah. bigger lagers,
sure.
The Bock, I seem to go to that one. I haven't been disappointed with either one of them.
Wow. Well, Doc, I've had your lagers, and you do a hell of a job lagering your beers, and they're super clean. I mean, let's talk a little bit about lager fermentation. I mean, these are really hard to do, and
yeah.
how do you do them well? And what's the trick? I mean, let's talk about yeast counts and volumes. I mean, Ray, I'm sure you brew plenty of lagers.
Pitch a ton of yeast.
Can you over-pitch a lager?
Theoretically, but practically, probably not.
Okay.
I mean, that's the old Siebel guideline is a million yeast cells per degree Plato per milliliter of wort. So that's a lot of yeast cells.
Okay.
So yeah, that's you really got to put a lot of yeast in there to get those guys cranked up.
Yeast for lagers are very finicky.
Mm-hmm.
You can't treat them bad in any mm-hmm. part of this. If you're doing your starter, you can't treat them bad. You can't pitch them a small pitch into a big bunch of sugar. It's going to stress them. You're going to have some problems with them. You got to treat these guys really nice.
Okay.
Well, Doc, you're doing 3-gallon starters, aren't you?
Yeah.
For 10 gallons?
Yeah. No, 20.
20 gallons?
20 usually. I'll usually build it up. I'll start with 1,000 milliliters, then I go to 2,500, and then I go to... 3 liter on a stir plate, or 3 gallon on a stir plate,
and so you're building up over a week then.
Mm-hmm.
Three times you're building it up.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I don't do these at cold temperature either. Room temperature. They like it better that way. They're gonna throw off a lot of esters that I don't want, but I'm decanting all that off.
All
that too.
Off.
I'll slowly cold crash them. I'll put them in the refrigerator before I put
hardcore,
them in.
He's hardcore, Ray.
That's a slow cold crash. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
I put them in
soft explosion.
Yeah. When I put them a 3-gallon starter in the refrigerator when I start the brew day. By the time I'm done, it's slowly gone down. It's cold.
Right.
It's about at fermentation temperature. I've got a nice layer of yeast on the bottom, the crud I don't want on the top, and it's so easy to decant
just
that
decant
off.
Because
I'm
off
not going to put that into my nice lager that I
right,
tried everything to
right.
keep it clean.
Yeah.
You pitch it right on top of the yeast that's on the bottom then.
Right, and it's a slow enough drop in temperature where
mm-hmm.
you don't freak them out, but they
mm-hmm.
will drop out.
Yeah, so then do you chill your wort all the way down to 50?
Yes. Yeah. I don't pitch before I'm down to temperature.
Yeah, I think that's pretty key.
What's your lag time? I'm curious, with that amount of yeast that you're pitching.
24 at the most.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And if,
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's not going to be a 3-hour ale thing, but 24 or less, 18.
Yeah. I think 12 to 24 is what you should be shooting for.
And it'll starts going.
Huh. See, I had tried brewing a Pilsner about 2 months ago, and I had underpitched. It took 4 days to take off. Yeah. I lost the batch.
That's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I underpitched.
That always makes you cry.
Yeah.
But Doc has another trick that you've mentioned on all of our shows a lot, too. If you pitch the night before and you go check on the beer the next morning and you're not seeing any noticeable fermentation.
I'll reoxygenate at that point. I'll reoxygenate every 6 to 8 hours until I see fermentation happen.
For ales and lagers?
Yeah. Wow. But I'll keep putting oxygen in there because it's going to dissipate out of the solution just over time. Doesn't necessarily have to be the yeast to take it up. And as long as they're not fermenting yet, and I'm not seeing active signs of fermentation, I'm going to give them another dose. It makes it a lot healthier.
Okay.
It goes on. But once it starts fermenting, don't do it anymore.
So is fermentation temperature 50? Ray had mentioned 50 when you pitch it.
I usually do 48 to 50.
Same as John, you do 48.
It's real key with these lager guys to keep them steady. They don't mind going up. They don't like going down very fast. They don't know how far it's going to go down, so they start putting protective coats on them and everything. And
got their mittens on, their nose warmers.
And they don't care about getting your gravity down at that point.
Okay. Yeah.
If you treat them real nice.
Or reducing your diacetyl.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you just treat them real nice and keep them real even, they're happy.
Okay.
And it might take a lot longer at a 48, but
patience.
You're
going to
get them.
Don't be
patient.
Scared.
Yeah. So how long is a little longer? And do you always keep it at 48, or is there a point where you...
No, generally, I'll do one of two things. It's keep it at 48, period, and when it gets down to it's not fermenting anymore, I'll just keep it at that, maybe for another week, and let the diacetyl come out of it that way, let it reabsorb that way. Once in a while, I'll bring it back up. I don't bring it back up to 80, maybe 60.
Okay.
Whoa. That's hot.
80?
80?
No, I said don't do 80.
Oh, you don't do it.
Okay. Oh, okay.
No.
Might go as high as 60.
Yeah, some people they'll read diacetyl rest, and it says 75 or something. Well, that's for ales.
For ales, right.
So when you're doing a lager, it doesn't take much to keep... You really want to invigorate them, a little warmer temperature.
Right,
they
right.
like being...
10 degrees is huge.
They like being at warmer temperature. They're going to work great, but they're going to give off things you don't want them to.
Okay.
Right. So you want to give them a little oomph. So you raise the temperature 10, like you said, 10 degrees is a lot for a lager. But do it slow. Get it up there. Give it some time to reabsorb the diacetyl, and you go back down. The other way is just to leave it at that lower temperature just longer.
That sounds safer to me. You just have
just
to wait a little longer.
Yeah.
So you could do that. Technically, you could stay at 48 to 50 for the entire fermentation, leave it a little longer, and then cold crash it or whatever you do before you keg it.
And generally, that's what I'll do. I'll leave it as it is and just give it that zen where I know when it's going to be done.
Hug the carboy.
Yeah.
Love it. No pants.
No pants.
I know. I know what you do
touch
in there.
It.
Oh.
It's sanitary.
He has a clean room.
It's a clean room.
It's super zen.
So I'll usually end up leaving it longer. I don't need the beer out of there that fast. I don't got to pull it out of the fermenter just to put something else in there necessarily.
Okay.
Ray, how long do you lager for? I'm just curious.
I'd probably be looking for about 3 weeks on something like this.
And then do you do a diacetyl rest for all lagers? Or?
Usually not. I mean, if it's the Bavarian yeast, that I've had success with in the past, no. Let it run all the way through. Give it a good, good primary. 10 days, 2 weeks.
Healthy yeast, lots of it.
Right.
3 weeks,
you're done. We're assuming that the fermentation starts within the first 24 hours, vigorous fermentation. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's where I'd be. And then rack it and get it down and get it chilled.
Okay. And, Doc, are you the same amount of time or longer?
Yeah, I'll go 2 to 3 weeks in the primary if I'm not going to raise it at all.
Okay.
And then it goes into lagering after that one.
Okay.
And I would say, a minimum of 3 weeks. And you're going to see a difference between... 2 week, 1 week, 2 week, big difference.
Sure.
3 weeks to 5 weeks, you'll even see a big difference.
Yeah.
What about clarity? I mean, do you still have, I assume you still have yeast suspension after 3 weeks, right? Are you filtering or do you let it lager out as you like secondary it? Or you go to a bright tank or some sort?
I don't really remember what the flocculence of the Bavarian yeast is, to tell you the truth.
At 34 degrees, it's not bad. It'll drop out. Anything will drop out fairly fast.
Sure.
Right. I mean, this is the reason that a small brewery in St. Louis uses beechwood chips. It is a support medium for indolent yeast.
Yeah,
really.
It's basically
More surface area.
It's all been boiled and sanitized beyond its.
There's no wood.
There ain't no wood in there. There ain't no flavors in there. All it is a support medium for the yeast to increase the surface area.
No kidding.
Of the yeast that's exposed to the beer during lagering. And rather than having it laying flat on the bottom where you have one layer of yeast that's exposed, you've got all this, sort of playground of beechwood chips down there for all the yeast to lay on, and that increases the exposure.
It's really a great idea.
It just helps lagering a lot better.
I thought it was tradition. I knew that they used chips, but I had read that originally there actually were beechwood barrels, so I thought it was just this tradition. We have to keep saying beechwood age, but what a very practical...
Well, it's more of a marketing thing. Like he says, they strip everything out of that beechwood they can. It's steamed, it's blasted, it's just laying, and I've seen it. And
it's not wood.
It's not wood anymore.
Soon to be European InBev wood.
Yeah.
There you go.
To get rid of the beechwood.
Oh, you never know.
You never can tell.
Do you want to try some listener beers?
I do, yeah. We had a Vienna lager. Let's try a little bit. We got to wrap things up. Let Ray go back to work and the rest of us maybe get some food.
You got a beer, too.
Well, let's taste. We had some listener Vienna lager here.
Actually, two kinds.
Okay. So let's get a taste of that. And maybe while we're pouring those, Doc, you could recap with Jamil's Vienna recipe.
All right.
Because we did cover our recipes. Well, and by our, of course, not mine. But John's and what Ray would do and Doc's. But let's find out what Jamil's is there. And then let's pour some of these.
I will pour it right now
while we're here.
Generally, he keeps it real simple. It's going to be Pilsner and Munich. We're going to go with the extract version first. Munich liquid malt extract, Pilsner liquid malt extract. The Pilsner is going to be a little less, about 46%, and about 52% for the Munich. He throws in a little bit of Carafa Special 2.
Okay.
A little color, a little roastiness to come through. Not much. We're talking 1.4%. So just enough, because you don't want to go overbound on this roasty, toasty thing.
Okay.
And then with the hops, we're looking at about 26 IBUs, all Hallertauer, 60 minutes for the first ounce and a half, which is 24 IBUs coming off of that at 60 minutes. And then in the last 10 minutes, he puts in another half an ounce for 5 gallons, and it's about 1.6. IBUs out of that one. It goes with the Southern German Lager for White Labs. Y yeast is the 2308 Munich, or Fermentis Soft Lager S23. You're gonna do dry lager or dry lager yeast.
That definitely. I mean, the recipe just taps onto what you're talking about earlier, Ray. Is a simple Pilsner and Munich malt. That's it.
Yeah, simplicity wins out. It can be a great recipe at all times.
And that's the extract version, and I didn't get quite to the all grain, but it's not going to be much different. You're going to replace the Pilsner extract and the Munich extract with continental Pilsner malt, 3 pounds of Munich malt, and 5 pounds of Vienna malt. So he's going to mix it up a little bit, which is one thing I actually got from your book, Ray, was when I was formulating my Munich Oktoberfest. I did the mix with Munich and Vienna and Pilsner. And I played with that a few times, and that really added some complexity without going overboard on any one thing. So
without getting flavors that are inappropriate, you can still get.
So in Vienna and Munich malt are real close.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They've got their own little subtle differences, and playing with the two in different ratios is a real good way to dial it in.
Well, that's also a situation where you might have Vienna from one maltster and Munich from a different maltster, and even though if they were from the same maltster, they might be exceedingly similar, when you get them from different maltsters, they've got slightly different flavor profiles, and that can really make it interesting.
And one thing is you're using a lot of... Pilsner malt in here, so it's a real light kiln malt. You really got to get rid of the DMS. So with the extract, you're going to boil it for about 60 minutes, but you really want to go up to a 90-minute boil with that much Pilsner in there, so you got to get that DMS out of there.
Lid off the kettle. Let that
Definitely lid off the kettle.
Lid off the kettle.
You want to increase your amount of water in there, because you're going to boil it off, and you want to hit your numbers still. So keep that into consideration with the 30% increase in your boil time. You're going to get more evaporation, too.
I think it's definitely a good point, too, to talk about for new homebrewers is a lot of new homebrewers go crazy. They're like, I can add all these adjuncts, all these additives. But if you can, just try and keep it simple for one beer and see if you can replicate one or another after the, you know, and just keep it simple. And just try and dial in a recipe because then you get to know your system. You get to know fermentation. You get to know your brewery and beers that you like, so...
And if you add one ingredient at a time as you keep brewing, you get to know that ingredient,
right.
too.
If you want to try out something on this, go with the simple part first. Mm-hmm. Brew the base beer, and then you want to experiment. Oh, I want to try this or that.
Add one thing.
One thing at a time.
One thing
at a
time.
You get to know exactly what the difference is. That recipe, of course, is from Jamil Zanishev and John Palmer's Brewing Classic Styles. It is a brewer's publication book, which has
fantastic
a table right
book.
Here.
It's, absolutely.
It really is a good book. And we've been talking about on the show, Ray, we get a lot of our listeners saying, entered into the NHC this year with Jamil's recipe. I wanted a tally of how many were Jamil's recipes.
Yeah, that'd be great.
A lot of people using it just because it's a good resource. So you can get that in the Brewing Network store, or you could get it right here at the conference if you're an attendee at the Brewers Publication table.
Absolutely.
People ask me all the time, what books do I recommend first? And I'm looking at the two on the table right
those
now.
Those are them, right? And then, of course, How to Brew. I mean, you got to put, if there are three books, it's the trifecta of brewing books.
Yep. How to Brew.
How to Brew, Designing, and Radical Brewing, which we think of at Brewers Publications. We think of those three as being the core. Yeah. If you want to make meads, there's the Complete Mead Bank Beer.
Okay.
So.
But Designing Great Beers and Brewing Classic Style is not going to teach you to make beer. That's where the How to Brew comes into it.
Exactly.
This is to help you, Designing Great Beers help you
make
make the beer and design the beers the way you want and what goes into it and why. It's so much why you do this. And then Brewing Classic Styles is so much easier to get a baseline.
Yeah.
Because there's recipes all over the place. And this is a great baseline. It'll get you right in the ballpark.
Yeah.
Right on. You might not be able to get every ingredient, so that's something else you can, you know, fudge here or there with the hops, possibly some grains, but if you follow the Brewing Classic Styles, you're going to get right there in the ballpark. You're not going to get a bad beer out of it at all.
Before we go, real quick, how about this beer you guys tasted? It is a home-brewed Vienna lager given to us by one of our listeners, actually, who is here. What do you think?
It's not bad.
I think the balance is really nice. Yeah. You know, the middle palate and finish in terms of the bitterness and the maltiness, really nice.
It's clean.
It's well-made lager.
Well fermented.
Yeah. I think it tastes
similar to a Southern English brown to me.
Yeah, I think so.
It has an ale character, I think.
It's a little warmer now, too.
That could
be it.
It's
a little dry, possibly.
He did use A30 German lager yeast, you know. Might get that a little bit of fruity character to it.
Yeah. I think there's some raison notes in here. There's a little darker malt component than you would ideally want.
Okay.
Then a Vienna, it's beyond toasty into the dark fruit.
Yeah.
It was 2% Carafa 3, so I might add it to it. Yeah.
But you're right about the balance. It is a very balanced beer, which is what it should be.
It's a nice quaffable beer.
Yeah. Certainly very drinkable. Great job, whoever it is.
It was Bill Ballinger
from Bill's. Okay.
I'm looking out in the audience. I'm not seeing anybody taking credit. So.
We got the next one to do, too.
We
take a break first. We're going to do that.
We're going to have to wrap it up. So if you want to do it quick, we can do that.
We got to do this one.
Okay. Let's taste that one. I'll do some thanks. And, of course, just a big shout to Jamil, who's getting better at home right now. Wanted to be here. So, Jamil, thanks for planning this show for us and getting it ready. Doc, for filling in here. What we got going on for the rest of the week, just so you know, is we will be live from Club Night tomorrow night. We're going to set up with the guys over at Beer, Beer, More Beer and do a live show. We'll be playing some Beer Jeopardy, Doc, your favorite. so that'll be a good time. And we'll have some prizes to give away. We'll get some listeners involved. And we'll be doing some more shows from in here in the Northern Brewer Hospitality Suite. And, of course, Northern Brewer has brought you this program today. And every time the Jamil Show airs, it's because of them. So what do you guys think of that one? This one's not as dark as the first one, is it?
Definitely not as dark.
Look at the color.
The big color difference?
Yeah, perfect color, I think, for Vienna.
Is it?
Yeah. That's what I think of, right in that range.
Okay.
Was it
right around 10?
First beer a little too dark for you?
It was too dark, okay. I mean, for the ideal Vienna. This has got a really beautiful hop nose.
Yeah.
I don't really think that's necessarily the style, but it's a really beautiful, noble hop nose. It's wonderful.
But it makes you want to just try the next step, which is drinking it.
I'm going to drink
the other
bottle.
Well, I was really surprised at how little amount of hops you all said to put into this beer.
It's not much.
So I would have definitely overhopped this also.
It's just you.
but that's because it's me.
I think that's, yeah, we're so used to hitting things with the hop stick.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, anytime you get over there, anywhere near Munich,
yeah,
you know, just hops, yeah, kind of forget about
them. This has got a great malt nose, too.
Yeah. It's a really well-balanced, clean beer. I mean, geez.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Very, very well-made beer. Very nice.
But probably wouldn't do well in the style category.
It's in the second round.
Close.
I think this is a pretty nice beer.
Okay.
I think we'd get into the discussion of whether the hops were too much, right, you know, versus the other things that are on the table.
That's what the judging table would sound like, you mean.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any faults here at all. I think it's just a matter of whether it's dialed into style now.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a nice beer.
All right. Good listener beers. And, of course, if you made it to the second round already, congratulations. That's
pat yourself on the back for that.
Absolutely.
And good luck to everybody who's here for that. All right. Thanks, everybody. John Plisse, thank you for carrying on the torch of the Jamil Show, sir.
Hey, thanks for Jamil. You know, yeah.
And Dr. Scott for filling in with us. Ray Daniels, can't thank you enough.
Glad to be here.
Really couldn't have thought of a better person to sit down on the style with
thanks,
us.
Thanks, Ray.
I'm sure you could have, but I was the one available, so it all works.
You're the first one I ran into, let's face it. Go over to the Brewers publication table right over there, and you can find Ray probably for most of the week.
Probably.
And, sign your book for you.
Oh, it's a great book. Get it.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Jamil. We'll see you at home. Feel better, sir. That is Vienna Lager.
We're thinking about you, man.
Enjoy the morphine.
Hey, what's next, John? You guys are going to have to do stout when you get
American
home.
American stout, yeah, when we get home.
Awesome.
And after that, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
There you go. Cheers. Bruce Strong.
All right. Live from NHC. We'll see you later in the week, everybody. Thanks a lot.